Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode number 104 of the CMO Marketing Podcast. We have a gentleman on the show today by the name of David Kim. He is based in, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he's the head of growth at a company called Fishtown Analytics. He knows data. David is going to talk to us about data, growth, acquisition, growing your business, all those kind of bits and pieces. Fantastic interview, very informative. I hope you get a lot from it. Before we jump into it, the usual housekeeping, if you can rate and review us on iTunes. It's not iTunes, it's Google Podcasts. It's not Apple Podcasts. Yeah, whatever it's called, you'll find it. That would be fantastic. If you want to come and find out a little bit more about what we do, cemoh.com, cemoh.com. You can also find me at simon@cemoh.com. Come and chat to me on LinkedIn. We're on every other platform, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and all those kind of bits and pieces. So, come and have a chat with me. And, of course, the final credit goes to Gilberto, thepodcastboss.com. Who makes all of our audio sound smexy. So thank you, Gilberto. But if you're looking to do any kind of audio podcast work, he can help you. Doesn't need to be in the same city as you. He can do it all remotely. So go and talk to Gilberto. That's pretty much it. Let's jump into the interview with David Kim. So welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. David Lee Kim, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. I'm out in Los Angeles, California, and can't complain about the weather and how things are going out here.
Awesome. Now let's just get a little bit of background about you. You're the head of growth at a company called Fishtown Analytics, and we'll talk about them in a second. But originally from Cambodia, I believe.
I'm actually born and raised in the US, but I have my roots in Cambodia. Yeah.
All right. So did your family move to the US?
They immigrated here in the late 70s during the genocide that happened there.
Okay. Do you get to go? Do you go back there at all much? Do you see much of your original background? It's not your original background because you're obviously born in the US, but the family background?
I've been there once, and the last time I was there was 2007. From what I hear, I have a tutor because I'm trying to make sure I continue practicing the language. She's told me it's changed a lot over the last 13 years. So I think I'm overdue for a visit. I was planning on visiting this year, actually, but obvious reasons, I couldn't.
That all went to, that's all gone to hell. So, okay. So talk to me about Fishtown Analytics, because I've kind of had a look at the website and it seems quite complicated. And maybe that's because I'm not a smart person, which generally is the case. But to explain to me what Fishtown Analytics do.
You and me are in the same boat. When I took on a job, I hardly knew what the product really did. But Fishtown Analytics is the maker of an open source project called DBT. We also have a cloud platform called DBT Cloud. And in the data space, there's this idea of ETL. It's extract, transform, and loading data into a warehouse. And what DBT does is it enables folks to do the data transformation within the warehouse itself. So that might sound like a bunch of buzzwords, but essentially what happens is with the ETL method, you require a data engineer to do a lot of the orchestration to get the data into the warehouse, which to a lot of data engineers, that's kind of, for lack of a better phrase, bitch work. Could be spending their time on more challenging and more interesting projects. What DBT does is they make it so that, you know, as long as a data engineer can bring that data into a warehouse like Snowflake, an analyst can actually go in and transform that data into whatever format that they need. So it removes that sort of effort from data engineer and actually empowers data analysts to take on more of that analytical engineering work, which is a lot more interesting and makes them able to self-serve data and serve the business.
So from a background perspective, like what sort of data are we talking about here? I mean, you know, people use the words data a lot. Are we talking you know, anything that, you know, normal business owners would be aware of?
Yeah. So DBT is more of the tool for, I'd say, manipulating the data and formatting in a way that's usable. You can imagine, you know, when you're getting any raw data on traffic data, for instance, or product usage data, all that needs to be transformed, stitched together in order to attribute, say, product usage or product sign up to a particular user. DBT enables someone to do that. So a majority of use cases tend to be around product analytics, marketing attribution, okay, revenue modeling, and so on. So it's a tool, but not necessarily just for one vertical.
And clearly there's some money in this kind of business, because at the top of your website, it says that you guys have just had Series B funding of almost $30 million. So I guess there's a demand for what you guys are doing.
Yeah, there's a big demand, and I think I'm fortunate to get to join the ride.
So head of growth, that's your title. What does the head of growth do on a day-to-day basis?
That's a good question that I haven't found a one-size-fits-all answer to yet. I can explain what I'm currently doing, which, you know, Fishtown Analytics is still relatively nascent in their marketing activities. So a lot of what that work looks like right now is getting the infrastructure set up and allowing us to do basic marketing. A lot of the growth has been through word of mouth, which is unheard of in a lot of software businesses of this size. So we just implemented HubSpot, which I spent 5 years at that company, so I know the product very well. And now we're implementing this approach to marketing that's called data warehouse first marketing. So, you know, folks have a CRM or they have a CDP. What we do is we pipe all our data into a data warehouse and then allow all our different tools like Intercom or HubSpot or Salesforce to ingest and use that same data. So it's essentially a golden record, one source of truth that allows us to enable marketing automation off of.
So what, I mean, obviously you've mentioned HubSpot there. What is your plan sort of moving forward? I mean, give us the sort of top line view that you think the sort of things that you, as a business of this size with this kind of funding and this amount of team members, what does marketing look like for you guys?
Yeah, and I think it won't be anything surprising, particularly for you. I mean, a lot of it is getting the basics done correctly. Data is never going to be 100% clean. Marketing is always going to be relatively messy trying to figure out what we need to do. But what the ideal situation that we're working toward is actually something that our friends over at Clearbit have implemented and we're learning from. But the goal is to have what we call a golden record of a customer. And what that golden record looks like is we know that this person signed up for a webinar that we did, and they might have visited our pricing page, and they might have signed up for the product on a certain date. And then when they sign up for the product, they end up completing the trial and upgrading or not upgrading. And if they do upgrade, we'll understand how they use the product, how engaged they are, how many team members from that company are using the product. And we'd be able to set up marketing automation based off of those different attributes. So we'd be able to see how engaged they are with the product. If they're not engaged, we can do automation based off the last time that they logged in to their account. If they're highly engaged, we can flag that in Salesforce and have one of our sales team members reach out to them and understand what they're looking for, how else the product can be helpful. So it's this 360 view of the customer that we're trying to get to. And I think that's the ideal world in any marketer's profession, right? You just want to understand the customer more and how you can do more to, one, support them in their journey in using your product, and help the business grow by using that data and figuring out which customers might be a good fit for a different product or upsells and cross sells.
Before I talk about that a bit more, you mentioned Clearbit there. Just for the people that don't know Clearbit, it's a product I know and I have used occasionally in the past. But explain to everyone what Clearbit does.
Yeah, Clearbit is a data enrichment tool. So if you're listening to this, you can go to clearbit.com, and check out some of their products. And if they use their own product. So if their product is working correctly, they use that data enrichment to fuel dynamic content on their website, which is one of the features that they provide. And this is how they use their golden record. They have an understanding of who you are, where you are, what your company's name is, the size of your company, and so on. And they use that information to make sure that their website is tailored to you as the viewer, and make sure that, one, to as a demo of what their product does, and to show you what you could do using Clearbit for your business.
Right. It's been a while since I've used Clearbit. I mean, I know you don't work for them, so criticizing them is a bit unfair, but you're obviously using it. I tended to find sometimes the data wasn't complete, but I guess that's more about you've got to kind of get that data out of people, haven't you?
Right. Yeah. We actually don't use it at Fishtown Analytics. I've used it at a previous company, but I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to me about your company's relatively new in the marketing space, which sounds bizarre for a company of that size with that investment, but who's your target market? Who are you trying to reach out to?
Yeah. Our target market is this persona that we're calling the analytic engineer. So it's this person's a hybrid of data analysts that's becoming much more technical, almost to the point of an engineer, but they're using engineering skills in the data world. And some of this is still a relatively nascent space as well. We've kind of created this title, and we're finding that as analysts learn about this role of an analytics engineer, they think to themselves like, oh, that's me. That's what I'm doing. I'm not a pure analyst. I'm essentially doing analytics as code. I think I'm an analytics engineer. And so we have kind of this bottoms up approach of the individual at a company adopting a free DBT account and then spreading that across their team. And eventually their team sees that the company should adopt this as a whole. In some cases, it might be someone from leadership who says, we need to fix our data pipeline. How do we do this? And a lot of our growth is word of mouth. So they chat with folks in their network and DBT comes up. We actually did an analysis of how people find out about DBT, and a majority of it is just people hearing it from a friend or a colleague or someone on their team.
So you're going for that sort of freemium model where they get a trial of it and see how fantastic it is, and then they end up sort of upgrading and spending money with you.
Right, right.
What's the best way? I mean, obviously the people you're trying to target sound like they're fairly technical people. They sound like they use, you know, a certain side of their brain rather than the other side. What's the best way to get through to those people? Because I tend to find them perhaps those kind of data engineers, those, you know, they probably tend to be quite cynical about marketing.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I worked as a product manager, and I'm familiar with working with engineers, and they cut through the bullshit really fast. They don't really listen to fluff. They can tell when you're just throwing out buzzwords. And that's something we're still figuring out. And the core thing that we're really leaning into is the community we've built around DBT. We have a community that's grown to over 9,000 members now on Slack. And, you know, joining this company, my instinctive reaction is, that's wonderful. Another Slack community, right? Who cares about Slack communities? They die out. They have a lot of hype. There's high engagement. And then eventually it just dies out. I've joined many Slack communities like this, but this one, we've actually just finished hosting our virtual conference called Coalesce. And we had a really interesting hybrid experience of hosting these webinars while having engagement happen in a particular Slack channel for that webinar. And the level of engagement that I saw in these channels was just unprecedented. There were folks making jokes, creating memes, asking questions live, and we had a really good system of responding to those questions. So I think, you know, hearing it directly from community members who, are more technical and maybe cynical, they don't care about marketing. As long as they get what they need to do their job well and continue learning, that's what I've found is kind of where our strength is. And the goal of marketing is essentially deprioritized compared to community. The community is the marketing itself, if you think of it that way. But I found that companies who try to add community under the marketing department end up failing because the intention is just wrong, right? You're creating a community to monetize and just make money off of. Whereas at Fishtown Analytics, the DBT community we've created lives under the product organization. The community is focused on how do we help folks using DBT to get more value? How do we make sure that they have the resources they need to do their job really well, really? So it's focused on that experience of making sure that they can do what they need to do and that we're there to provide support, not just there to market to them or sell to them.
That must be quite frustrating as a marketer to sort of, I mean, you've almost got a hands-off approach to the community. You're almost like, well, I don't want to touch that in case something goes wrong or in case it suddenly perceived that you're trying to be this, salesy organization. I guess it's quite hard sometimes to stand on the outside and watch all this happening on the inside.
I think as someone who would be more focused on outbound marketing and just making as much money as possible in a short term, it would be frustrating. The culture the leadership team at Fishtown has built is very focused on the long-term game. They're not trying to make as much money as possible. They're trying to build a strong community with a reliable product that grows long-term. And, you know, when you hear values like that on a website, again, my cynical side steps in or skeptical side steps in and says, there's no way that with all this investment that a company like this is actually living by those values. But lo and behold, we have policies where if a partner vendor joins our Slack community, they're not allowed to do any outreach to sell a product. Right. And likewise, we as the marketing and sales team also don't mine our community for any sales opportunities. It's all inbound.
So I guess your job as a marketer really is just to introduce more people to this community potentially.
Exactly.
I guess that's probably priority number one.
Yeah, that's the play.
How do you then translate that strategy to the people that are listening out there who haven't had, you know, $30 million invested in them?
Yeah.
If you're looking at this from a small business perspective or you're a startup perspective, you know, engineers are quite, they will hang around in packs online because that's what engineers do. But that doesn't necessarily mean to say every other people would do that. How do you take the theory of what you guys are building there from a marketing perspective and translate that to an ordinary business? Are there any sort of key things that you can take out of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say because I'm in this position right now, but I believe it all comes down to that customer experience. We treat our users, whether they're using our open source platform, which is completely free, or whether they're using our DBT Cloud account that starts from free, can be $50 a seat, can be $200 a seat. We provide them all the support that they need. Whereas I know for some companies, I know from using free products firsthand, they don't care about their free users. They don't, if you're not giving them money, they're not going to really be supporting you. Mm. And I think, you know, HubSpot is a good example. They use this concept of the flywheel of, you know, you acquire customers and you acquire free users, you end up engaging them, you want them to monetize. And then there's this next step of making sure that your customers are happy because that's how you get word of mouth to spread. And then I think a lot of these questions around how do I grow word of mouth are really asking the wrong question. It's how can I better serve my customers so that they just talk about my product to all their other friends and recommend it. I think that's where word of mouth comes from, is from happy customers. I don't refer a lot of products to friends, but the ones I do refer are companies like Schwab, Charles Schwab for my checking account. They have amazing customer service. I always feel taken care of. And I've gotten many friends to switch over the checking account to Charles Schwab. And I think it all comes down to how happy is this customer with the service that we're providing them. And folks might be focusing a little too much on getting new customers and not making sure their existing customers are happy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we see that a lot, is that there's the easiest way to make more money is to go back to your existing customers and potentially deliver additional services for them or additional products, whatever it is, rather than, you know, chase after chase after new brands. I guess one of the challenges in that, in building a community of people where you're educating and teaching them, as a small business, you've probably still got an eye on, are these guys going to spend money with us? It's kind of hard. Yeah, it's kind of hard for a small business to just to not look at the, you know, not look at the immediate revenue. It's nice when you're in a big business and you've got investment and you can have that long-term strategy, but that smaller business perhaps has a more immediate eye on generating revenue.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think let's remove the phrase community here, because I think community creates this perception of just this group of people who aren't paying you that you're supporting. And I think if we were to just say, let's keep your current customers happy, that changes the way we think about this a little bit. Because if a small business is keeping their existing customers and thinking of that as a long-term game, if you keep your existing customers happy, engaged, the word of mouth is going to come through that versus going and starting a new initiative and starting a new community. That takes time. It's not something for those who need that revenue coming in now to keep a business alive. It's a very different strategy. And if that is what a small business wants to do, I'd recommend, you know, spending 5 to 10% of your time doing that and making some small efforts every day to build that community. But it's definitely not something where you expect it to grow in a couple months. It's something that takes years. And fortunately, leadership at Fishtown Analytics has participated as community members. They didn't just create this community and say, hey, I lead this thing. They created this community of, we had this issue, we created this product. I'm sure other folks had this issue. Let's help each other out. And I think that's the key to how this community grew. It wasn't created as a monetization channel. It was created as a channel to really get folks who are going through the same experience to engage with each other.
Well, that's where I was kind of, that was my next question, is if you people wanted to create a good community, be it online or offline, you know, what are some of the key features and attributes for a community to be successful and keep growing?
Yeah, To be honest, I have trouble having a clear answer to that, because I walked into Fishtown Analytics with this community already built. I didn't do much of that work, to be honest, but being a member of it now and seeing how it functions compared to other communities I've joined that kind of faded out, I'd say what makes this community different is when there are regular ways to keep the community engaged. And that's a very vague way of saying it, but we highlight community members for contributions, for any contributions they make to our open source platform.
Right.
We highlight community members when they are open to doing an office hours to answer how their company's approaching data. We have these mechanisms that I think happened very organically. They weren't something that was premeditated in a way where it was saying, if we host these office hours, we would get customers. It was just, hey, we're getting a lot of these questions from community members. We know a data engineer at this company that has solved that problem before. Can we have them on a webinar and just do an ask me anything? And maybe that'll be valuable for the community. It was just finding ways to answer questions the community has and making sure that desire to learn and get better was addressed.
I guess there's a fine line, a fine balance between you guys being involved in the community and you guys stepping back from the community and kind of letting it have its life of its own.
I think it's a very fine line.
Yeah.
You know, we can't try to have control of the whole thing. That just, I can't see that playing out in a good way.
How important are some of the other channels, digital marketing channels, to you guys? I mean, I guess things like search engine optimization and, you know, paid ads. Is there any of that in the pipeline, or is that fairly redundant given the type of business you are?
That's something in the works right now, actually. I've been setting up our SEO strategy, figuring out the basics of what keywords we should be ranking for that, quite honestly, we're not showing up on any of the search engine results pages for.
Right.
And I also do a marketing agency on the side called Omniscient Digital. And it's really interesting jumping in and understanding why Fishtown Analytics hasn't had to do any content marketing. They've just been growing. If I showed you the percentage of referral traffic we get, it's crazy how much referral traffic there's coming in. And a lot of the organic traffic is actually not through the typical blog posts that other companies may have. A lot of the organic traffic comes to the documentation about the product. So I think that's another thing to talk about for community. It's the documentation is part of providing resources to a community. But yeah, to answer your question, we are figuring out, okay, we want to grow this blog. We need some more product pages to talk a bit more about the product because it's a little bit vague on our website. What keywords are we going after and all of that? So all of that's coming down.
That is a highly underrated SEO tactic is product documentation. You know, PDFs, technical PDFs, full of useful information about products. A lot of people don't understand. A lot of people don't understand that Google can see a PDF. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a JPEG with text in it. Google can actually read a PDF. So, you know, I've seen big successes with websites that have lots of technical information as PDFs and, you know, product information, those kind of things. So is that where you're saying that kind of stuff's already being seen and found in Google?
Yeah, and they're not even PDFs. And to be honest, the thing that I particularly love about this is not something that could have happened from a marketer premeditating and trying to figure out how to grow organic traffic.
Right.
Looking at HubSpot, they grow crazy organic traffic through their blog. They're publishing dozens of posts a week. Right?
Yeah.
But Fishtown at getdbt.com, the documentation that they created to help people use the product is what's getting a lot of organic traffic. And this isn't, they're not even SEO optimized. They have codes, they have paragraphs of code snippets showing how to do specific things. So it's a beautiful thing that's happened.
It reminds me of a client of ours that they've got three businesses and we focus on one of them. We never really looked at the other two. And I looked at one of the other two's Google Analytics one afternoon, or I was sitting in their ballroom. And I couldn't quite figure out, they seem to have a lot of organic traffic and the organic traffic seemed to be very consistent. And I went to the part in Google Analytics, which shows you which content people are looking at. And there was a specific page in there. And I was kind of look at them and so going, well, you've got one page in your website that appears to be really popular. And do you know what this page is? And they were like, not really. And we opened up the page and had a look at it. And then they kind of went, oh, yeah, that was a page when they created a suite of icons for a particular program. They use, and again, this is where it gets technical and it gets lost on me. They use something called Project Haystack.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's...
No, I haven't heard of it.
It's a tool. They're an IoT company, and Project Haystack is an open source naming convention for taxonomies for building equipment and operational data and stuff like that. I think it's been embraced by Google and blah, blah, blah. So it's a similar in an open source, you know, open source product. And they created this suite of icons that they'd use for something in their business. And they decided years ago to dump the icons onto the website in a blog and say, look, anybody that wants these icons, help yourself. They're free to use. Go for your life. And what had happened with those icons sounds like exactly what had happened with Fishtown Analytics. They just sort of organically, people had gone, look, here's some great icons. I mean, you know, obviously in a much larger scale with you guys, but a developer community had sort of linked to these icons somewhere, you know, and all of a sudden there was this constant stream of traffic of people coming into the website to download these icons and just completely by accident. So it's funny that, you know, technical data or code snippets or icons can be part of a content plan. Just giving that stuff away and showing that people that where that stuff is and they can have it is a valid marketing tactic.
Yeah, and things like that, it just happened organically, right? I'm sure they didn't expect anything like that to happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I want to take you back before we wind up, because you've obviously had a fairly kind of quick growth, you know, path from where you were perhaps 8, 9, 10 years ago. I'm not going to even touch on the fact that you were a breakdance instructor, according to your...
Long ago, yes.
But you must be pleased that it's going to be included in the Olympics.
Yeah, so. I had some mixed feelings about it, but I think it's a net positive for the art form, yeah.
No chance of you sort of dusting off your old skills and seeing if you can represent America?
I definitely will not make it to the Olympics, and I think I'll keep it in my apartment for the time being.
Okay. Probably all the Fishtown Analytics Christmas party.
Yeah.
Well, I think you probably want to hope that none of your colleagues look that far down your LinkedIn profile. Otherwise, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, maybe I should remove that.
What I did want to focus on was the restaurant marketing, because restaurant hospitality marketing is one of the hardest, in my mind, is one of the hardest jobs out there, because all it takes is a bad review or a bad experience to someone, and all of a sudden, everything you've done can be completely undone. Give us maybe one or two key things. If there's anybody listening out there that has got a restaurant or is in hospitality, I know you didn't do that for a huge, you know, amount of time, but give us a couple of things that you learned about that industry and about marketing that industry.
Yeah, it's funny you ask about that. I don't get to chat about that experience very much, but you know, in digital marketing, there's always this conversation of marketing attribution, what channels brought our customers in, trying to get the clean data, which we were just talking about earlier in this conversation. But yeah, in restaurant marketing, so much of it is just not trackable, and it's very ad hoc. It's, again, it comes back to that word of mouth. When I started at The Little Door, which is a restaurant in Los Angeles, they were around for maybe 2 decades already. They had the name recognition. I just needed to help fuel the flames on that and help it grow. Unfortunately, they actually just closed. I was supposed to have dinner there, but with COVID and everything, they had to close down. But what happened is we would get these celebrities coming in to the restaurant with, you know, LA, there's, you just run into celebrities everywhere. And yeah, I had a Twitter stream set up, I think on Hootsuite at the time, with four different streams for four different restaurants that we had at the time. And I would keep an eye on whoever was going to the restaurant, taking pictures, posting about it, and responding to them all. And I would get these celebrities reaching out over Twitter and saying, hey, do you have a table available? And lo and behold, I'd have to chat to whoever is leading the reservations that day, get a table for them, and they would end up posting about it and all of this. Or we'd have some campaigns with influencers who, you know, I can't say I'm a too big a fan of influencer marketing, but it's something that actually works. When you see the same people over and over posting, yeah, about this restaurant, it gets it in people's minds and folks start attending. You see lots of engagement in those influencers' Twitter and Instagram posts. And while you can't directly attribute to new customers coming in, you can only kind of trust the process that ongoing advertising that's relatively organic is going to help. So it was kind of having to get comfortable with not always having the data there.
Yeah, I think that's a massive challenge. I mean, hospitality, I see as a backward is the wrong word, but perhaps, yeah, it's an industry that I think has often put marketing last and potentially relies too heavily on word of mouth and often location as well, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the argument would be if the Little Door was not in Los Angeles and did not have did not have potential influencers in there, would it have been as successful in a different, you know, in a different suburb or in a different town?
Yeah. The funny thing is, at the time, there were a lot of new restaurants opening up just down the street from us as well, and they looked really cool and hip and all that, and that was what was most scary, because, you know, folks in LA just want to try that new thing that's coming out. So there were periods where it kind of slowed down because we saw those new restaurants opening up. And, you know, looking back, I haven't gotten to reflect on this very much, but if I were to look back now, I'm not entirely sure how I would do things differently if I were to open a restaurant.
Yeah. I guess the interesting thing, you talk about influencers there, just to sort of wind this up, I kind of guess that's where you kind of come full circle. I mean, it's Influences is one of those dirty words that people have used in the past sort of 5-6 years that has grown into this full industry. But I guess whether you're a restaurant or whether you're a, you know, a massive analytics company, influences one way or another is you know, something that can, again, as you sort of make or break your business. All it takes for you guys at Fishtown is for having one reputable CEO or engineer somewhere around the world to start talking and blogging about your product. And all of a sudden that can, you know, change the way that you're, you know, the way that you're viewed in the community.
Yeah. And this is something that our founders have spoken about early on. You know, companies like Casper were one of the first companies, Casper, the mattress company. They were one of the first companies that took a bet on us. And I think they IPO'd recently. JetBlue is also a big customer of ours as well. So we're fortunate to have these logos that while it may not be the individual, I'm sure it does have some influence on folks being able to trust DBT more.
Yeah, JetBlue's the airline, is it, in the US?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So again, I mean, that's a good example, is that all you need is somebody senior in JetBlue, a senior engineer or a CTO or even the CEO, to be rocking up to an airline conference and start talking about their work that they've done with Fishtown Analytics. You know, and that's happening, that all of a sudden that's then opening you up to more markets that might not know about who you are. It's influencer marketing. I mean, it's not, you know, chicks in bikinis on Instagram, but it's unless, of course, the CEO of JetBlue is a hot chick in a bikini.
I don't think we'll be going that direction.
No, I don't think that's probably not. It's probably not right for you guys. But it's still... it's still influencer marketing, isn't it? It's very, very different than the chicks in bikinis on Instagram, but it's still delivering the same result. It's still got people talking about you. And I guess everything that you need to do as head of growth in however long you are with Fishtown Analytics is get as many people talking about you as possible.
Right. Yeah. The interesting part right now is we've had the early adopters that, you know, despite the product not being in the best place and being quite buggy, they worked through it because it helped them with their pains that they were facing. And now we're at this phase of, what about these folks who are kind of later adopters? How do you speak to them? How do we get them to find out about DBT? Maybe it's not through word of mouth. Maybe there's another way. And that's where the organic and paid strategies come in. So that's why we're starting to shift that strategy a little bit.
So last question, how do you define your success when you report into your CEO or whoever it is, you as head of growth? How do you turn around and say, look at what a fantastic job I'm doing? Are you doing that based on, you know, website visits or signups or trials or customers? What's a key metric for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's just, I mean, if there was one key metric, it's revenue, but the way I look at it is we have this self-service experience where folks can sign up and use a product, pay us without talking to a sales rep. That's what I own, whereas our sales team owns kind of enterprise larger deals. And success, I think, for myself as head of growth is helping us get more users signing up every month and seeing that month over month growth accelerate, and also making sure that those users aren't just folks who are taking a look around, that they're actually engaged, they use the product, and in the long term, they end up turning into paying customers because they see the value in the product. So I'd say that funnel of becoming a user, using a product, and actually going on to pay us is going to be the metrics for success for me.
Awesome. David, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I hope 2021 gets you the chance to head back to Cambodia and you know, see some of the family back there. But I hope you guys achieve the success that you're looking for, and we'll definitely keep an eye on Fishtown Analytics and its growth.
Yeah, maybe while I'm in that part of the world, I can come by Brisbane as well. I appreciate you having me on.
Brisbane's a funny old place. You know, it's one of those ones where people talk about, we all joke at Brisbane, it's like everybody, when you ask people to name cities in Australia, they of course get Sydney and Melbourne, and nobody really knows Brisbane. It's kind of like it's perceived as being as a sort of a small town, but it's really kind of growing quite rapidly. So yeah, it'd be fantastic to have you here.
Likewise.